Welcome back to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour. Leaders Speak, a conversation on federal acquisition. The U.S. federal government is increasingly acquiring products that have qualities that cannot be easily and clearly defined in advance, and that are difficult to verify after the product or service has been delivered. Trevor Brown and David Van Slyke, authors of Complex Contracting, elaborate.
There's a distinction made in the procurement community between goods and services. Goods are the hard stuff in terms of literal hard things. You can touch them, feel them, whatever. And services are the services that people provide. We think that's the wrong distinction. The important distinction, we think, is between, as you mentioned, complex products and simple products. And think of products as inclusive of goods and services. Simple products are easy to describe and easy to make. Complex products are hard to describe and hard to make. And by hard to describe, we mean that they are hard to literally write down in a contract what it is that I want to buy. It's very difficult for me to specify everything about that product that I want. Things that are hard to make are things that require what academics would call specialized investments, investments that are unique to the production of that product that can't easily be transferred to some other product if people stop buying it. We highlight the Nimitz, the U.S. military's successful acquisition of aircraft carriers. And here you have a very challenging market situation in which there's only one purchaser. The Department of the Navy is the only one that buys Nimitz-class aircraft carriers, and there's only one provider. Historically, it was Newport News, which has been bought by Northrop Grumman. So there's not a lot of buyers and sellers in this marketplace. They are in a long-term relationship, but it's been a very, very successful long-term relationship in the sense that the Department of Defense has acquired an asset that allows it to project its strength and fulfill its mission requirements over a 100-year period now. And the vendor has successfully been able to remain profitable and continue to produce a product for a single buyer.
The Nimitz example highlights a successful complex DoD acquisition. And DoD, which consumes the second largest portion of the government revenue after entitlements, will likely see significant cuts in the coming year. Indeed, cuts are already being made. And at the same time, DoD must continue to support operations and modernize forces in support of national security. In light of these budget constraints and the evolving security challenges, DoD will need to gain every possible efficiency while reducing the temptation to buy defense on the cheap. Jack Gensler and Bill Lucian, authors of the IBM Center Report, 8 Actions to Improve Defense Acquisition, explain this situation in more detail.
Well, one of the most obvious things is it's uncertain. And therefore, the preparation for a wide variety of future potential events has to increase your cost. Because how do you handle everything from terrorism to cybersecurity to tank-on-tank engagements and so forth? And that uncertainty represents a challenge when the budgets are declining. And that's been a traditional problem. And in fact, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, when he was there, Mike Mullen, said the number one national security problem is the debt. Mm-hmm. Because if we can't handle it all, how do we get prepared for it? And our strategy for the last, 50 years has been technological superiority. That's been our national security strategy. Well, then that means you have to continue to invest in research. And one of the first things that always goes when the budget declines, the first 3 things actually are travel, training, and research. So training and research are kind of foolish things to cut. On the other hand, because especially with the uncertainty, you want to be able to respond rapidly, and that's what training is for, readiness. And research is so that you can stay ahead technologically. And we're losing our lead in that. And technology has now become globalized so that everybody has technology. It's hard to maintain technological leadership unless you invest in it.
Well, when you look at the budget, you can see that the average budget over the last 70 years for DoD has been about $480 billion. And so we're still well above that level. But at the same time, you have increasing O&M costs and increasing healthcare costs, increasing support costs. So there's a tremendous squeeze on what's left in the budget to allow for modernization. And that's, I believe, a significant threat.
One of the things that I could add to that is that people believe that this 18-year cycle that we see in the defense budget is somehow a law of nature. It's not. It's exogenously driven. Every time there's an external event, like 9/11 or Pearl Harbor or North Korea, you know, any of those events, that's what drives the budget. It's not just a law of nature that follows every 18 years. You build it up and it comes down and goes up and comes down. I think it's important to recognize that this uncertainty of the strategic environment is also affecting the uncertainty in the budget environment.
Absolutely, yeah.
In the spring of 2010, there was a recognition by the Secretary of Defense that the current fiscal environment would not support the continued budgetary growth that DOD had experienced in previous decades. So the department pursued the Better Buying Power Initiative, which is in its third iteration.
Well, one of the things that is essentially wrong in it was it said all services will be recompeted every 3 years. Mm-hmm. That's a total disincentive to a service company. Instead, what it should have said is you'll be rewarded with a follow-on if you reduce the cost and improve the performance. That's an incentive to get higher performance at lower cost. And that's been dropped in the follow-on Better Buying Power 2.0, yeah. But I think that's the kind of thing that you just don't want to incentivize backwards, you know.
Well, I think that was a change in how the initiative evolved.
Okay.
The first one was more prescriptive. It said always do this or always use fixed price contracts. And the second one tried to be a lot more nuanced and said use the appropriate contract structure, use the appropriate kind of competition.
Well, if you end up focusing on low cost mm-hmm. and forget about high performance and high reliability, you get cheap junk.
Yeah.
And that's not what we need. What we need is high performance at low cost. And to get that, you need incentives. And the way you can get incentives, one of them is, of course, through competition. Another is by rewarding, if you have a sole source supplier, mm-hmm. that they can either get a higher profit if they do lower cost, because profit's only a small percentage. It's only 5% of the total cost. If you can figure out how to reduce the total cost, you could give them 6% profit on a smaller number. Okay, so that's one way you can do it. Another way you can do it is by incentivizing them through follow-on business. If they do a good job, they'll get the follow-on. If they don't get higher performance at lower cost, throw it open to competition. That's essentially the threat of competition. But it works.
What else works? That's what Jack Gantzler and Bill Lucian, authors of the IBM Center report, 8 Actions for Improving Defense Acquisition, want to focus on.
How do you create continuous incentives?
Okay.
It's the incentives part that people
are missing.
Okay. And you want to do it for the right reasons. So if you're one of the suppliers, you want to figure out how do I get a higher profit with a guaranteed follow-on. And the way you do it is getting higher and higher performance at lower and lower costs with higher and higher reliability. And so we want to figure out how to compete in each phase of the program.
If you mandate competition every 2 or 3 years, the inclination is going to be not to invest any money but to provide the service at the lowest cost possible and increase your profits, knowing that there's an excellent chance that you may lose that contract in the next go-around.
Well, one thing that is hard to do perhaps but necessary, and that is past performance should matter and whether you're a qualified source because if you have a good historic record, that will help a lot in simplifying the process. And the other thing you want to do is to not drive the cost very high for the competition. Mm-hmm. So if you have 1,000 people bidding on it, you know, that may be fair, but it's also much more expensive. And in fact, people don't try very hard when they have that 1,000 people bidding against them because the probability of win is small. And so you want to shape the competition. And that's why the prototype competition is usually just 2 or 3 that are funded. In all cases, they will have gone through a qualification first. Are they qualified? Do they know what they're doing? Have they a decent history? And then let them demonstrate. And the demonstration's a key piece of this competition in that case.
Gantzler and Lucian also call for improving the effectiveness of such things as IDIQ contracts. But more importantly, none of these recommendations or improvements will happen without DOD and other federal agencies recruiting and retaining a world-class acquisition workforce. What does the future hold for federal acquisition? We will explore this question and much more when the special edition of the Business of Government Hour, Leaders Speaks, returns.